File 63. The question as to the ground reasons for the predominant importance of Arianism can be answered by pointing out that it is not so much that the Arians are endowed with a stronger instinct for self-preservation, but rather that this manifests itself in a way which is peculiar to themselves. Considered from the subjective standpoint, the will to live is of course equally strong all round, and only the forms in which it is expressed are different. Among the most primitive organisms, the instinct for self-preservation does not extend beyond the care of the individual ego. Egotism, as we call this passion, is so predominant that it includes even the time element, which means that the present moment is deemed the most important, and that nothing is left to the future. The animal lives only for itself, searching for food only when it feels hunger, and fighting only for the preservation of its own life. As long as the instinct for self-preservation manifests itself exclusively in such a way, there is no basis for the establishment of a community. Not even the most primitive form of all, that is to say the family. The society formed by the male with the female, where it goes beyond the mere conditions of mating, calls for the extension of the instinct of self-preservation, since the readiness to fight for one's own ego has to be extended also to the mate. The male sometimes provides food for the female, but in most cases both parents provide food for the offspring. Almost always they are ready to protect and defend each other, so that here we find the first, though infinitely simple, manifestation of the spirit of sacrifice. As soon as this spirit extends beyond the narrow limits of the family, we have the conditions under which larger associations, and finally even states, can be formed. The lowest species of human beings give evidence of this quality only to a very small degree, so that often they do not go beyond the formation of the family society. With an increasing readiness to place their immediate personal interests in the background, the capacity for organizing more extensive communities develops. The readiness to sacrifice one's personal work, and if necessary, even one's life for others, shows its most highly developed form in the Aryan race. The greatness of the Aryan is not based on his intellectual powers, but rather on his willingness to devote all his faculties to the service of the community. Here, the instinct for self-preservation has reached its noblest form, for the Aryan willingly subordinates his own ego to the common weal, and when necessity calls, he will even sacrifice his own life for the community. The constructive powers of the Aryan, and that peculiar ability he has for the building up of a culture, are not grounded in his intellectual gifts alone. If that were so, they might only be destructive, and could never have the ability to organize. For the latter essentially depends on the readiness of the individual to renounce his own personal opinions and interests, and to lay both at the service of the human group. By serving the common weal, he receives his reward in return. For example, he does not work directly for himself, but makes his productive work a part of the activity of the group to which he belongs, not only for his own benefit, but for the general. The spirit underlying this attitude is expressed by the word work, which to him does not at all signify a means of earning one's daily livelihood, but rather a productive activity which cannot clash with the interests of the community. whenever human activity is directed exclusively to the service of the instinct for self-preservation, it is called theft, or usury, robbery, or burglary, etc. This mental attitude, which forces self-interest to recede into the background in favor of the common weal, is the first prerequisite for any kind of really human civilization. It is out of this spirit alone that the great human achievements have sprung, for which the original doers have scarcely ever received any recompense, but which turns out to be the source of abundant benefit for their descendants. It is this spirit alone which can explain why it so often happens that people can endure a harsh but honest existence which offers them no returns for their toil except a poor and modest livelihood. But such a livelihood helps to consolidate the foundations on which the community exists. Every worker and every peasant, every inventor, state official, etc., who works without ever achieving fortune or prosperity for himself, is a representative of this sublime idea, even though he may never become conscious of the profound meaning of his own activity. Everything that may be said of that kind of work, which is the fundamental condition of providing food and the basic means of human progress, is true, even in a higher sense of work that is done for the protection of man and his civilization. The renunciation of one's own life for the sake of the community is the crowning significance of the idea of all sacrifice. In this way only is it possible to protect what has been built up by man and to assure that this will not be destroyed by the hand of man or of nature. In the German language, we have a word which admirably expresses this underlying spirit of all work. It is Pflichterfüllung, which means the service of the common weal before the consideration of one's own interests. The fundamental spirit out of which this kind of activity springs is the contradistinction of egotism, and we call it idealism. By this, we mean to signify the willingness of the individual to make sacrifices for the community and his fellow men. It is of the utmost importance to insist again and again that idealism is not merely a superfluous manifestation of sentiment, but rather something which has been, is, and always will be a necessary precondition of human civilization. It is even out of this that the very idea of the word human arises. To this kind of mentality, the Aryan owes his position in the world, and the world is indebted to the Aryan mind for having developed the concept of mankind. For it is out of this spirit alone that the creative force has come, which in a unique way combined robust muscular power with a first-class intellect, and thus created the monuments of human civilization. Were it not for idealism, all the faculties of the intellect, even the most brilliant, would be nothing but intellect itself, a mere external phenomenon without inner value, and never a creative force. Since true idealism, however, is essentially the subordination of the interests and life of the individual to the interests and life of the community, and since the community on its part represents the prerequisite condition of every form of organization, this idealism accords in its innermost essence with the final purposes of nature. This feeling alone makes men voluntarily acknowledge that strength and power are entitled to take the lead, and thus makes them a constituent particle in that order out of which the whole universe is shaped and formed. Without being conscious of it, the purest idealism is always associated with the most profound knowledge. How true this is, and how little genuine idealism has to do with fantastic self-dramatization, will become clear the moment we ask an unspoilt child, a healthy boy, for example, to give his opinion. The very same boy who listens to the rantings of an idealistic pacifist without understanding them, and even rejects them, would readily sacrifice his young life for the ideal of his people. Unconsciously, his instinct will submit to the knowledge that the preservation of the species, even at the cost of the individual life, is a primal necessity, and he will protest against the fantasies of pacifist ranters, who in reality are nothing better than cowardly egoists, even though camouflaged, who contradict the laws of human development. For it is a necessity of human evolution that the individual should be imbued with the spirit of sacrifice in favor of the common weal, and that he should not be influenced by the morbid notions of those knaves who pretend to know better than nature, and who have the impudence to criticize her decrees. It is just at those junctures when the idealistic attitude threatens to disappear that we notice a weakening of this force which is a necessary constituent in the founding and maintenance of the community, and is thereby a necessary condition of civilization. As soon as the spirit of egotism begins to prevail among a people, then the bonds of the social order break, and man, by seeking his own personal happiness, veritably tumbles out of heaven and falls into hell. Posterity will not remember those who pursued only their own individual interests, but it will praise those heroes who renounced their own happiness. The Jew offers the most striking contrast to the Aryan. There is probably no other people in the world who have so developed the instinct of self-preservation as the so-called chosen people. The best proof of this statement is found in the simple fact that this race still exists. Where can another people be found that in the course of the last 2,000 years has undergone so few changes in mental outlook and character as the Jewish people? And yet what other people has taken such a constant part in the great revolutions? But even after having passed through the most gigantic catastrophes that have overwhelmed mankind, the Jews remain the same as ever. What an infinitely tenacious will to live, to preserve one's kind, is demonstrated by that fact.